But I want to talk to you today about a story, a tale about two dads. And here's where we're going to find their story. We're going to find their story really beginning in Genesis chapter 13. So if you go to Genesis chapter 13, just open it up. You know, I'm not going to read it verbatim to you today. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask you guys to follow along. But it is the story of Lot, and it is the story of Abraham. And so as I tell their story, you know, you guys can just follow it along. We're going to actually be jumping around. We're going to look, maybe pull a little bit out of chapter 12, maybe pull a little bit out of Genesis 15, maybe a little bit out of 18, maybe a little bit out of 22. But it's the story of Abraham, and it's the story of Lot. But I want to begin like this, you know. Instead of going back 3,000 years right now, I want to just go back about 31 years. I want to go back to February of 1976. So I'm going to ask it like this. Does anybody here remember the epic TV series from that year entitled Rich Man, Poor Man? Does anybody remember that? Rich Man, Poor Man? Now, I'm going to date myself. I'm going to say Dan shaking his head no. So it's like before his time. He doesn't even know what I'm talking about. He was three. But if you have Netflix, I'm sure you can watch this, maybe, this TV series. And I'm going to tell you, I was a junior in high school that year. As I said, the first time it was shown was February 1st, 1976, and it was released with great anticipation, and it got just rave reviews. Now remember, this was in the day before there was cable. And in the days before there was cable and 400 channels, families gathered around their TV sets. I mean, we still did that because, well, back in 1976, I think I can tell you the stations that we had. We had Channel 2 out of Detroit. We had Channel 4 out of Detroit. We had Channel 7 out of Detroit. So I guess that was CBS, NBC, and ABC. And we got the CBC out of Windsor, Ontario. And that was it. So there wasn't really a lot of, and you know what, we didn't even have one of those clickers, you know. You actually had to get up, and you had to walk to the TV to turn the channel. And well, no, we were, you know, really modern. We had an antenna on the roof. We didn't have the rabbit ears. But you actually had to get up and change the channel. Could you imagine that? So you could, you know what happened in our house a lot, that we'd get set to channel 2 or whatever at 6 o'clock in the evening, and when everybody went to bed, it was still at channel 2. You just watched what came on that channel. We weren't too particular in those days. But in those days, we gathered around the TVs for 12 consecutive weeks to experience life, to experience love, and to experience tragedy with the Jordache family. Now the plot centers around the two boys of Axel Jordache, and he was this hard bake, you know, this hardcore owner of a bakery in upstate New York. And the first son, whose name was Tom, now Tommy Jordache was the bad son. But he longed for this deep, fulfilling, loving relationship with, well, his dad, who was, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it, was just pretty repressed. You know, he didn't really show his feelings too much. And he just wanted this relationship so bad with his dad, but it never really developed. Never developed as Tom had dreamed it would develop. So he became deeply hurt, and at a young age, he left home. I mean, he was still in high school, and he left home to strike out on his own, and things began really well, and he began to train as a boxer. And he became a bit of a regional, you know, success story, and a regional sensation. As a matter of fact, if this would have been a true story, you probably would have heard about him up here at Potsdam, but it was fiction. But he finds love, he gets married, and he has a son. But you know what, his wife just wasn't feeling fulfilled. And she takes off. She leaves. So Tommy then, he begins to strike out on this path that leads to booze, a path that leads to drug addiction, a path that leads to violence, and finally a path that led to prison. That was Tommy Storm. It followed him all through Richmond, poor man, these 12 consecutive weeks. But there was a second son, and the second son's name was Rudy, and now Rudy, he was the good son. So we had Tom, who was the bad son, and now we're going to look at Rudy, the good son, and he wants to do the right thing. So he goes off to college, and he becomes a lawyer, and then he becomes a U.S. senator, and his goal of being a U.S. senator was to take on the power brokers in Washington. And he did this because he had this desire to leave the world a better place for his children, and a better place for his children's children. Now, for me, it is no great stretch to draw parallels between the Jordache brothers and Lot and Abram. You see, in essence, they were brothers. So they were, you know, Abram was you know, Lot's uncle, but they were raised in the same home. They were raised in the house of Terah in the Ur of the Chaldees. But they were brothers, really. You know, they really were raised as brothers. And they were raised as brothers who loved God, for they both knew God. But the way, here's the key, the way that they conducted their lives, the way that they raised their families, and the ways that they received the results, like Tom and Rudy, they were in stark contrast with each other. This week, you know, I've really been into the story of Lot and Abram, and I'll admit to you as well, I had to go back and I had to Google rich man, poor man, to kind of pick up on the story. I mean, 41 years is a long time. I can't even edit it so many years. Mm-hmm. But it's a long time ago. So I went back and I began to look at both the stories, Lot and Abram, and rich man, poor man. And as I was going over these things, I've been led to ask a few important questions on this Father's Day. Questions for us men, you know, really questions for, you know, wives as well, but as questions for leaders. And the first question is this: where am I looking? You might think, well, what does that have to do with anything? Where am I looking? Well, maybe you'll come to understand it in a moment. Where am I looking? Because over 3,000 years ago, we read the story there in Genesis 13 about two men of God who stood on a hill overlooking the plains of Jordan, trying to decide what was best for the growing family. That's where we are. Lot looked down and he was captivated by the sheer beauty of this fertile valley and said, "Hey, I'm sorry, but that's where I want to go. I'm going down there to the plains." But you see, there's something here that really jumps out at me, because he never asked God what he should do. He never considered what was best for his family. He just saw green and he saw water, and away he went. But then I think about Abram. We see that he consulted God, and he cast his eyes on where God told him to cast them. And as we shall see, the outcome of these two very lives are so vividly different. So I ask myself this morning, to me and to you, is where are we looking? Where am I looking? Now, I understand really that I'm preaching to the choir when I say that the world we live in today is just a visual banquet beyond our imagination of just a few short years ago. You know, with the technology that we all have and enjoy today, we have countless of choices on where to look. Through the wonders of television, through the wonders of the internet, and of this media soap society, that we can cast our eyes on beautiful things, we can cast our eyes on indescribable things, we can cast our eyes on wholesome things. But because of these fantastic advancements that we're enjoying, these advancements in technology, we can also view dark things, we can view horrible things, we can view wicked things. We can view things, men, that can belittle women, we can look at things, men, that will forever change the relationship that we have with our wives. We can look at things that were meant only to share between husbands and wives, but yet it's out there and our children are in danger. And you know what? Sometimes I feel that our young men are behind the eight ball before they ever have a chance to get started in a good, wholesome relationship with a good, godly woman because of the things that they've seen because of the internet. Now, don't get me wrong, the technology that we have today is fantastic. I've already said that, but it can also be dark. And you know, dads, we have to live a life above those things, that we cast our eyes on the indescribable things. We cast our eyes on the beautiful things, but dad, we can't cast our eyes on the dark things, because how in the world are we going to tell our children not to if we're doing those very things? Protect yourselves, men. Protect your children, men. I guess what I'm trying to say to you today is life is a series of choices. Like Lot, we can choose to take good things, things that we think are best for our loved ones, and never ever consider their needs or never ever consider their feelings. This is the type of choice we see Lot make. It leads to all kinds of problems in his life. When we stop making choices that God would have us make, the path we choose takes us in the wrong direction. So we need to be asking another question, like, where am I living? Right? Where am I living? Now, I find the story of these two dads very interesting because, well, I say this because it tells the tale of one dad who's Lot, who's moving away from God and he's moving toward disaster, while the other dad is increasingly moving toward God and for blessing. So we see these two brothers who are standing on a hill overlooking the Jordan Valley. Abram, being the elder, could have easily said, "Hey, wait a minute, Lot. I'm the old guy. I'm going there. I have seniority. I'm going there." He could have left, you know, Lot just scrounging around in the desert for pasture. But he didn't do that. You read the story and you'll see it. I believe that Abram had such faith in God that he understood that if he lived where God wanted him to live, the harsh desert floor would provide everything he needed to sustain life. So Lot chose the plain and all of its greenery. Now, I don't want us to be too hard on old Lot. I really don't. Because good pasture and abundant water seem like a pretty wise choice, right? It seems like a pretty good choice, doesn't it? Seems like a good business decision, doesn't it? But if you fast forward just a little bit, if you jump over there to chapter 19 of Genesis and you look old Lot up again there, where do you find him? I mean, do we find Lot out in the fields, tilling the ground and taking care of his flock? Is that where we find him in chapter 19? I don't think so. You see where we find him? We find him sitting at the heart, at the very center of a city that's so wicked that the Lord would destroy it by fire from the sky. Abram, on the other hand, waited for God to decide where he should go. And then you know what he did? He did what he did in chapter 12. He did what he did in chapter 15. He did what he did in chapter 18. He did what he did in chapter 22. He went. He was praying. He was giving up his will for the will of God. He went. And when he went, God blessed him. And when he went, God made his name great. And when he went, the whole world was blessed through him. I mean, that's right there in 12 and verse 6. So all of this forces me to ask now, not just, where am I looking and not just where am I living, but it also forces me to ask, where am I leading? See? Where am I leading? And I'll say it again. Good grazing land, abundant water seem like a pretty darn, you know, seem like a no-brainer choice for a lot to me. At first. But he failed to recognize that the wickedness of Sodom would provide temptation strong enough to destroy his family. I want to say that again. He failed to recognize that the wickedness of Sodom would provide temptation strong enough to destroy his family. Temptation strong enough to enable him to give his two daughters over and to be violated by the wicked men of that city. Temptation strong enough, his son-in-laws refused to leave the depravity. Temptation strong enough that his wife just had to see that place one more time to look back against God's will, and it cost her her life. The pull of that place was so strong that when it was time to leave, Lot was not able to lead his family out of harm's way. And it cost him everything that was so near and so dear to him. So where am I leading? I think that's really a good question. Now listen to that. It demands. It doesn't ask or it doesn't desire, but it demands some pretty tough introspection. For me, it demands me to look inside and ask, am I leading like Lot? Am I allowing the temptations of the city, the temptations of the world, to destroy everything that's near and dear to me? Or am I leading like Abram? Am I leading by the will of God? When Abram had to lead his son Isaac, he commanded such respect that Isaac was compliant. You know, I think Abram led his life in such a way that his son trusted him, so that no matter what, he trusted, he knew Dad, he loved Dad, he knew that he followed God, and it just allowed him to trust Abram so that no matter what, he knew that Abram was doing what was best. That forced me to say, who do my children trust me? Who do they trust me? To know that the things that I, the places that I leave them, do they trust me to know that what I'm doing is God's will and is for the best? As I said, it's tough. Introspection demands tough introspection. So which leads me to ask one more question. What's my legacy? Can you show the video, please? You know, guys, I think that's a good question. How long is our shadow? Several years ago, on Father's Day, a friend gave me a book called Letters to My Son. The first chapter of the book, the author writes these words, and I'm going to read them to you. None of us can escape the shadow of the Father, even if that shadow fills us with fear, even if it has no name or no face. To be worthy of that man, to prove something to that man, to exercise the memory of that man from every corner of life, however it affects us, the shadow of that man cannot be denied. We all labor under a shadow. It makes us who we are, and it shapes the person that we hope to be. To become a father is to understand the power of that shadow from the other side. You realize that the touches you make upon your son will shape him, for better or for worse, for his entire life. And who can know which touches have meaning? A word here, a glance there, a time together, a time apart. Which will be the moments that will rise up in memory and shape the child that looks without judgment on all you do and say, friends,
Lot's legacy was two nations as the result of immorality. Those nations were the Amorites and the Moabites. And history tells us that they were two of Israel's greatest enemies, plaguing them all their days. And so for me, on this Father's Day, it presents some hard questions for me. Where am I looking? Where am I living? Where am I leading? And most of all, what is my legacy? I guess what I'm wondering today is, do we understand? I mean, do we really understand that the things that have happened in our families and the things that are happening in our families indelibly imprint the next generation? See, children and our children's children and our grandchildren's children. These things that are happening imprint the next generation with a story, with an understanding of life, and it shapes their future for better or for worse. So, with the help of God, dads, let's imprint the next generation with the understanding of a fantastic future. You know what? How about this? Let's help our children be the Rudys and the Abrams of today. And with that, I say amen. Amen and amen. My prayer is that God richly blesses each of you guys today as you go throughout your day.